ジャイ。
ジャイ。
ありがとう。
Tonight, we'll begin chapter 59. What's chapter 59 called? The killing of the demon? Naraka, sort of. So, the interesting pastime which is taking place. So, we hear about Krishna killing the demon and collecting his remaining 16,100 wives. From the demon Naraka, or Bombasura. So. Okay, so we'll go from verses 1 to 22. King Parikshit said, "How was Bombasura, who kidnapped so many women, killed by the Supreme Lord? Please narrate this adventure of Lord Shunga Dhanvas." Shukadev Goswami said, "After Bhoma had stolen the earrings belonging to Indra's mother, along with Varuna's umbrella and the demigod's playground, at the peak of Mandara Mountain, Indra went to Lord Krishna and informed him of these misdeeds. The Lord, taking his wife Satyabhama with him, then rode on Garuda to Prag Jyotishapur, which was surrounded on all sides by fortifications consisting of hills, unmanned weapons, water, fire and wind, and by obstructions of Mura Pasha wire." Okay, so, Raj, you'd like to read the first paragraph?
The Acharyas have explained in various ways, why Lord Krishna took his wife Satyabhama with him. Shri Sridhar Swami begins by saying that the Lord wanted to give his adventurous wife a novel experience and thus took her to the scene of this extraordinary battle. Also, Lord Krishna had once granted the blessing to Bhumi, the earth goddess, that he would not kill her demonic son without her permission. Since Bhumi is an expansion of Satyabhama, the latter could authorize Krishna to do the needful with the unusually nasty Bhaumasura.
So what are the points there? Why are you so late, Manachi?
I just
finished. Any point?
Fulfill
the desire.
He wanted to keep
blessings. Fulfill
that desire.
Someone else had a point?
Yeah. He wanted to keep the promise.
Yeah. Good.
Lord, I wonder if you know what experience of the incident, how he's going to achieve it.
Anything else?
Such a woman found it enjoyable.
Yeah, that's a good point. You had service as well, did you? Or is it just the family trait? Everyone comes late in the family. What's going on? Not good. So, Satyabhama is a Kshatriya princess. Actually, she's the expansion of Srimati Radharani. So because she is the expansion of Radharani, she has the same adventurous spirit as Krishna himself. Krishna is Kshatriya in the Dwarka pastimes. In the pastimes in Vrindavan, he is Vaishya, the cowherd boy, part of the cowherd community. But even when he's in Vrindavan, he has this Kshatriya spirit, or this spirit of the royal order. And actually it's described that a few chapters ago, Krishna kidnapped Rukmini. And one time Prabhupada was sitting in Vrindavan. If you go to Prabhupada's house in Vrindavan, and just behind, there's a courtyard in the back. You may have been there. It's all courtyard. And Prabhupada used to sit there in the afternoon. And in the afternoon, the devotees would read from the Krishna book to Prabhupada. So Prabhupada was listening to the Krishna book, and they were reading this chapter of where Krishna kidnaps Rukmini. And then it describes that as Krishna drove off, all the other warriors chased Krishna, and then Krishna turned the chariot around and he attacked the other warriors to defend Rukmini. So actually it doesn't mention in the Bhagavatam in the Krishna book, but Prabhupada interjected, because Prabhupada could see these pastimes just like Shukadev Goswami can see them. And Prabhupada said that Krishna gave the reins of the chariot to Rukmini, and Rukmini began to drive the chariot. And Prabhupada points out that the Kshatriya princesses, they have the spirit. And they are Kshatriya, they're warriors. They're from the royal dynasty, the royal family. So they have that Kshatriya spirit. So just like Krishna has that mood, Rukmini, Satyabhama, they also have this mood. So they have the same heroic spirit. Even in history, of the Kshatriya dynasties in recent times, there were times when the Kshatriyas went out to fight the battle, they came back, and the wives were in the palace, and they were standing on the roof, and they said to the husband, "Why have you come back from the battle?" And the husband would say, we did not win. And then she would not open the door of the palace. She would say, "You either go back and die
or
become victorious. But you don't come back defeated." That's the Kshatriya spirit. Either you die or you become victorious. Krishna says that in the second chapter of the Gita. Now Krishna says, "Happy are Kshatriyas for which the fighting opportunities come unsought, opening for them the gateway to the heavenly realm." So Kshatriyas, this is their spirit. And a real Kshatriya princess has the same spirit. So she's riding on the back of Garuda with Krishna. Krishna's riding the battle and she's sitting there with him, going into the battle. So Krishna promised her he would give her a Parijata tree, because Rukmini received a flower. The flower was given to her from the Parijata tree. A Parijata, that's a heavenly tree. Now it's on earth as well. It came down like that. Has a very strong, it's like a jasmine. Has a very strong fragrance. You see in India, it is there. They're very sweet. So Krishna gave, one flower was given to Rukmini. So Satyabhama said, "Then I want the whole tree." And Krishna promised her, he said, "Yes, I will give you the tree." So the nature of a pious person is they will always fulfill their promise or their vow. That's why specifically in the Nectar of Devotion, the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami says, "Do not take vows in front of the deities." Because if you take the vow, you have to fulfill the promise. This is one of the key features of Vedic culture. Vedic culture has several key features. One is respect to elders. You have to always respect the elders. There are different key elements to the Vedic culture that make it successful. Another of the elements is one must always keep one's word, one's promise. And if one makes a vow, one must complete the vow. That is the Vedic culture. These days, we say something, but, we're not so committed that we will necessarily do that thing. or if we can't do it, we don't feel so bad. Or even in the beginning, when we make a promise, we may even be thinking in our minds, I may not fulfill the promise anyway. That's acceptable behavior these days. And sometimes we even may do that ourselves. Sometimes we say we'll do something that we don't do it, or we can't do it, or we even know that we probably can't do it, but still we'll say it. In the Vedic culture, if you promise something, you must do it. That's a civilized culture. So Krishna promised Satyabhama, that he would give a tree. So he always maintains his promise, his vow. That's why he says to Arjuna in the Gita, he says, declare it boldly, my devotee will never perish. Because Krishna is promising, and Krishna does not break his promises. If he appears to break his promises, that's just for his lila, his pastime. You know, he will never let anyone down. Even one time, Krishna dressed up as a gopi and came before Radharani and was criticizing Krishna. You know, Krishna dressed as the gopi, the female, with Radharani. He was criticizing, saying, you can't trust him and he always does like this. Radharani said, you don't know him. Krishna was just testing her. But Radharani said, you don't know him. He always maintains his promises, his vows. So this is the lesson we should learn. We should also do like this. Hands up if you never tell lies. No one. There's usually one person. See, we all tell lies. So.
White lies.
Yeah, white lies. We try not to. White lies are permissible. Just like, you know, someone brings their baby, you know, and you show the baby, and the baby is very ugly. You know, but you say, oh, she's so beautiful. You know, but the kid looks like E.T. or, you know. But still, you will say, that's a white lie. Those things are permissible like that. But we should not tell the big lies. So, we should not break our promise. That's the point. Krishna does not do it. Krishna is Purushottama. Just like, what is this month called? Purushottama Mas. Purushottama means the month of the topmost person. Krishna is the topmost person. Right? He always maintains his vows. He always keeps his promises. So he's teaching us we should also do that also. Any points? Oh, I've got a second paragraph we can read.
When you said that, like, Satyabhama is a constructor of Radharani, herself, Satyabhama.
Expansion of Radharani.
And then, but it also said, like, it's an expansion of the Bhumi Devi. Is it compared to
the earth? Yeah, the earth is an expansion of Radharani. Yeah, of Satyabhama. So. Second paragraph.
Finance of the Maha have been equipped by our Indian brothers, resting upon just about to bring company. To pacify Satyabhama, Lord Krishna has promised her, I will give you a whole tree of these flowers. And does the Lord schedule this procurement of a heavenly tree within his itinerary?
Any points? What are you two doing? This doesn't look like you're listening to the Srimad Bhagavatam 10th canto. Discussion of the pastimes of Krishna with his queens. If you want to play, you sit in the corner. If you sit there, you have to be very attentive. Okay? Hare Krishna. Thank you, Mataji.
King Dashrath also kept his promise.
Who?
King Dashrath, Lord Rama's father.
Yeah, Lord Ram kept his promises. Any other points? So, Krishna always fulfills the desires of his devotees. If a devotee has a desire, Krishna will fulfill that desire, if it is for the benefit of the devotee. But Krishna always fulfills. So if we have spiritual desires, some spiritual aspiration, just like I saw before, one of my god brothers, Radhacharan Prabhu, he preaches in China. He lives in China. One of the only Western devotees living in China and preaching. So he was saying that he had a desire, because he does a lot of preaching in different programs, for he wanted to have a projector, portable one. He said it was very expensive, and the Adobe software is very expensive. And he said, but still he had the desire in his heart. He wanted to have this equipment to serve Krishna. And then, yesterday, one lady came and gave him a printer, said, here's a printer. And then someone else came a few hours later and said, we're giving you this free software, which is worth thousands of dollars. Because he had some desire in his heart. So Krishna will fulfill the desires, if it is a spiritual desire. If it's a material desire, then that is up to Krishna. Sometimes he will fulfill your desires, but only if it brings you closer to him. Or sometimes he fulfills your desires, but not in such a way that you'll ever ask for that thing again. It says that in the Bhagavatam. Sometimes he gives you something, but then you'll never ask for it again. Because Krishna wants it to bring us back to him. So sometimes he has to act in such a way to sever our attachments. But Krishna will always fulfill the desires of the devotees. So, any points? Okay. So we'll read the, you want to read the last two paragraphs?
Even nowadays, devoted husbands take their wives shopping and thus brought Krishna to Satyabhama to the heavenly planets to get a heavenly tree, as well as to retrieve the goods Vamasura had stolen and return them to their rightful owners. Srila Vishwanathan Chakravarti knows that in the heat of battle, Queen Satyabhama would naturally become anxious for Lord Krishna's safety and pray for the battle to end. Thus, she would readily give permission to Krishna to kill the son of her expansion.
So, any points? Okay. So, a devotee always feels anxiety for Krishna. You know, like Satyabhama, she is feeling anxiety because Krishna's fighting a battle. So she feels anxious. We should also feel anxious in our service for Krishna. Actually, you make advancement when you become anxious in your service. If you're not feeling anxious, then you don't make, you make advancement, but if you want to make rapid advancement, you have to take up responsibility for the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, for spreading the Hare Krishna movement. When you take up responsibility, that's when you really start to make advancement. Because when you take up responsibility, anxiety comes. Because there are so many challenges, there are so many difficulties. So then you become anxious. And then the more you spread the movement, Prabhupada said, the bigger the opposition becomes. And the more the opposition comes, then the more anxiety you get. But Krishna purposely does this to purify us of our material attachments. So we have to take up anxiety for Krishna. If you don't take up anxiety and you don't become anxious, you don't make advancement. It means rapid advancement. So all of us have to think, how can I take more responsibility? How can I take receive anxiety for our service? Right. And then that's when we begin to advance. So, any points?
Yeah, Prabhupada, to
anxiety for establishing Bombay temple. They big fight.
Yeah. Yeah, so much anxiety.
Anything else? You should promise to Lord Krishna that I'll get you this land.
Yeah.
But also have to keep the balance, that make sure that too much anxiety doesn't make us get sick.
Yeah. Yeah, so keep it balanced. Are you feeling balanced or?
Yeah, but sometimes I have to get sick.
Yeah. Yeah, so you have to keep it balanced. That's a good point. Any other points?
No attachment is more important than the mind to Krishna.
No attachment?
Attachment she has for Krishna is more important than any other one.
Yeah. Yeah, she's anxious for him. Yeah. Good point. Okay. With his club, the Lord broke through the rock fortifications. With his arrows, the weaponed fortifications. With his disc, the fire, water, and wind fortifications. And with his sword, the Mura Pasha cables. With the sound of his conch shell, Lord Gadadhara then shattered the magic seals of the fortress, along with the hearts of its brave defenders. And with his heavy club, he demolished the surrounding earthen ramparts. So the basic premise is that Krishna is undefeatable. He cannot be defeated. Only foolish people oppose Krishna. Demoniac people are very stubborn and also very foolish. And sometimes within ourselves, because within our own person, we have both sides of our personality. We have the devotee and the demon. Or the one who surrenders to Krishna and the one who rebels against Krishna. Both are within our personality. But when we rebel against Krishna, then we will be defeated. So the basic lesson is that we should be surrendering to Krishna. You see these demoniac personalities like Kamsa, Ravana, Shishupal, Dantavakra, all of them, Jaya, Vijaya, in all the different incarnations they took. They rebelled against Krishna. But the basic lesson is, whenever you do that, you will be defeated. So in our own lives, as devotees, we have to see that we are not rebelling against Krishna, but rather we are serving him and being voluntarily surrendered unto him. As soon as we try to enjoy separately from him, we will suffer. Prabhupada said, when you say, I want, that is sense gratification. Sometimes we say, I want this, I want that. That is sense gratification. And what does Krishna want? One time I said to my guru, he said, why do you want to do this? I said, I want to. He said, who cares what you want? Who cares what you want? That's sense gratification. And even what I was asking for was something spiritual. I wasn't asking for something material. He said, why do you want it? I said, because. And he said, who cares what you want? So that is the nature of the conditioned soul, of the false ego. Right? We want to rebel against Krishna. As long as you rebel against Krishna, you will suffer. So within ourselves, we have to learn not to be independent. But give your independence to Krishna. Surrender your free will to Krishna. Then you'll be happy. Any points? Okay. The five-headed demon, Mura, who slept at the bottom of the city's moat, awoke and rose up out of the water when he heard the vibration of Lord Krishna's Panchajanya conch shell, a sound as terrifying as the thunder at the end of the cosmic age. So, Krishna has, or you say Vishnu has four symbols. What are the four symbols? Yeah, so if you go into the temple and you're looking at Radha Vallabha and then you look up, you'll see the four symbols of Vishnu. The disc, chakra, the gada, the club, right? The conch,
and the
lotus, like that. So these four are there. So generally, the conch and the lotus are for the devotees. Now, when you surrender to Krishna, he benedicts you. Now, he touches you softly with the lotus or with the conch to inspire the devotees. And then for the non-devotees, he gives them the club and the disc, which you'll see he uses both in this pastime. But for the non-devotees, the conch is terrifying. It says when Krishna blows his conch, it gives miscarriages to the wives of the demons. Because they're so. Basically, the point is, if we surrender to Krishna, right, Krishna is very attractive. But if we oppose Krishna, Krishna becomes extremely fearsome. So we have to make our choice as devotees. Because Krishna has two sides. If you're his friend, he's the most loving person. But if you're his enemy, he's the most severe person. So we see, whenever we rebel against Krishna, then he becomes a little strong with us, right, to bring us back into line. That's his mercy. So with his conch, the Mura demon is feeling very fearful. He's feeling disturbed. For the devotees, they feel uplifted. Just like when you read in the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna blew his conch, what's his conch's name? Panchajanya. And then Arjuna's conch's name is? Devadatta. Is it? Arjuna. Yeah. And then it says Yudhishthira, Bhima, Nakula, Sahadev. They all had different names for their conscious. Megapushpa, Pragosh, mentions the different names. So Krishna's name of his conch is Panchajana. So when Krishna and Arjuna blew their conch shells, then all of the warriors on their side, even though their army was smaller, felt very uplifted in their heart. But when he blew his conch shell, when the opposite army, the Kauravas, which was a bigger army, when they heard the sound of their conch shell, their hearts cracked in despondency and fear. They knew they would be defeated. So if we oppose Krishna, we will be defeated. And if we stay with Krishna, then we'll be uplifted. Any points? Shining with the blinding, terrible effulgence of the sun's fire at the end of a millennium, Mura seemed to be swallowing up the three worlds with his five mouths. He lifted up his trident and fell upon Garuda, the son of Taksha, like an attacking snake. Mura whirled his trident and then hurled it fiercely at Garuda, roaring from all five mouths. The sound filled the earth and sky, all directions, and the limits of outer space, until it reverberated against the very shell of the universe. So it describes that Krishna is, in the Bhagavad Gita, it says, in the Bhagavatam actually, it says that Krishna is feared by fear personified. So this entity that came out of the moat, the water surrounding the city, it said it had five heads. It was like Hydra or something in the Greek mythology or the Greek stories. So a very powerful demon came out. But even these most frightening personalities, they're inconsequential or powerless in front of Krishna. And we see it is like that. Our material desires sometimes feel like that. Sometimes we feel like our material desires are like a huge demon, which is unconquerable. Or sometimes Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Prabhupada's guru, said sex desire, he said sometimes it rears its ugly head, like a cobra or something like that. It suddenly just pops up, our sex desire, like a demon or a powerful monster or entity or something like that. So compared to Krishna, all of these things are insignificant. If we take shelter of him, these things, they just flee away. But if we don't take shelter of him, these things are very overwhelming. Our material desires can sometimes be very overwhelming, very frightening. But when you surrender to Krishna, even the most difficult things, like these demons, the most powerful demons, they become insignificant. So if we surrender to Krishna, we will always be safe in our devotions. Any points? Then with two arrows, Lord Hari struck the trident flying toward Garuda and broke it into three pieces. Next, the Lord hit Mura's faces with several arrows, and the demon angrily hurled his club at the Lord. As Mura's club sped toward him on the battlefield, Lord Gadagraja intercepted it with his own and broke it into thousands of pieces. Mura then raised his arms high and rushed at the unconquerable Lord, who easily sliced off his heads with the disc weapon. So what is Krishna's ultimate weapon? Yeah, the chakra. And you'll see all through his pastimes. You can't fight with Krishna because he has a chakra. And the chakra is completely independent. And the chakra is actually a form of himself. It's an expansion of himself. The weapon is actually worshipped. Just like you'll see when Jagannath is worshipped, Jagannath Balaram Subhadra, quite often then they'll have chakra. So he is also worshipped. Sometimes in the Shalagram form, he takes the form, Chakra, Sudarshana. So he is non-different from the Lord himself. So how can you defeat God when God manifests as his ultimate weapon? It's a spinning disc, and it's undefeatable. And it moves so quickly, you cannot even perceive it. So the basic premise is do not try to oppose Krishna, because you will lose. And we see that ourselves. Sometimes we try to be rebellious and it doesn't work. Have you ever tried to do that? Have you ever tried to do something that Krishna wouldn't find out about? Sometimes you might try to do. You try to do something Krishna won't find. Krishna knows you're going to do it before you do it. And then when you do it, he's right there. And just like one bhakta was living in the, I've told the story before, one bhakta was living here in the ashram when I first joined. He moved into the ashram. I'm friends with him on Facebook now, actually. He's not practicing so much Krishna consciousness anymore, but he's so favorable. He was living there. So then his mother was putting pressure on him. Move out of the ashram, don't stay in the ashram, like this. So he stayed there, but his mother was... And then one day his mother came and picked him up. So he walked out, jumped in the car, and she drove him home. So she wore him down. So he tried to escape from Krishna, tried to forget about Krishna. And I've seen, even recently, I've seen actually devotees do this. Some devotees have left the movement recently. Friends of ours, you may know who I'm talking about, some devotees, you know, they sometimes leave, try to forget Krishna. So he drove home, his mother drove home, she took him back, he went inside, went into his bedroom, you know, took off his neck beads and everything, and like, you know, took off his dhoti and forget Krishna. And then he turned on his radio, and then Boy George said, "Bow down, mister. Hare Rama, Hare Krishna." Right? As soon as he turned the radio on, he told me later on, he said, "I tried to escape, but as soon as I turned the radio on, then Krishna was there." So you can try to escape Krishna, but it's not possible. Krishna is always there before you even get there. Mm-hmm. So how will you escape him? You're better to just surrender and cooperate. Because most of the time he'll completely destroy all of your material desires anyway. And he'll make you see how ridiculous all of your attachments are anyway. So you're better just to surrender to Krishna. But if you try to escape, then Krishna will always be one step ahead of you. And he'll bring you back to him. It says that if you once chant Krishna's name sincerely, Krishna will never forget that. And Prabhupada actually says in the Nectar of Instruction, Krishna will forcibly drag you back to Godhead. Prabhupada says that. If you've sincerely chanted the holy name even once, which all of us have, then Krishna will forcibly take you back. Even if you try to escape, you can't escape. Krishna will bring you back. So better just to cooperate. Make your life easier. Make Krishna's life easier. And it's not difficult for Krishna anyway, so either you do it the easy way or the hard way, that's just your choice. You know, when we're at your funeral, right, we'll all tell stories and we'll say, well, he did it the hard way. Or he did it the easy way. It's up to you. It's going to be the same result. It's just a matter of how you want to do it. That's all. So, any points?
What do we see some people like come for Bhakti Vikshas? So they come for 1 year or so and then suddenly they stop and then they just leave, they don't chant and they don't come to the temple.
What's the question?
Yeah, how does that happen? Like, because I mean, they have chanted, they're coming regularly to the programs, Bhakti Vikshas programs or Harini Maharaj's program. But suddenly something happens in their life or they feel that I don't want to take to this path and they just leave.
Yeah, because the jiva has independence. So you can't force anyone to do anything. Krishna gives them free will. So you have to choose to use your free will to surrender to Krishna or not. That's your choice. We have choice. I don't have to stay here. Yeah, I can shave my seeker off and take off my robes and go and forget about Krishna if I want. That's my choice. I can't forget about Krishna because every day he will remind me. But that's my choice, whether I want to serve him or not. So it's just free will. So, you know, maybe their material desires have not all been burnt away like that. It means, you know, it's a test. All of us are tested every day. And whether we pass that test, that is up to us. Some days we do pass the test. You know, when Krishna puts us in a situation, do we remember him or forget him? Sometimes we do forget him. Sometimes we remember him. That's our choice. So it's free will. You can't make anyone surrender. You can encourage people. You can inspire people, but you can't force them to surrender. It's up to everyone. Like, no one's making me. I come because I want to come. Yeah, it's my choice. Any points?
Could you explain before Krishna was referred to as Lord Gadadhara, and now he's referred to as Lord Gadavraja. Could you just explain what that means?
Gadadhara means one who wields the club, and Gadagraja means one who holds the club. So.
What should we do, like, when we know that some of the devotees are leaving, and should we try to get in contact with them and do something?
If someone leaves, yeah, of course. How would you feel if you left and no one contacted you?
Did you know that other people have tried to do it and it didn't work?
Yeah, so then, like, you know, some devotees have left right at the moment as we speak. You know who I'm talking about. Like, you know, they left only last month or two, right? So they're not answering the phone. They're not making contact. They changed their name on Facebook. You know, it's all. So it's pretty obvious they don't want to have contact. Even today, actually, I was thinking, oh, maybe I'll ring. But then it's not high priority for me because I know they're probably not going to pick up the phone, right? If I know someone's going to respond, then of course, then you know. Sometimes when devotees leave, one of the main reasons they leave is because they don't feel like the other devotees care about them. So as soon as you show some care, they come back. Yeah, but other times it's like philosophical doubts, or sometimes attachment to sense gratification, or Maya is tricking them in some way. You can try if you want. If you're talking about the people we're speaking about, then you're not going to have a huge impact. But if you want to reach out, that's nice. But don't expect, like, everything to change. You know. Okay?
When you were saying about them material desires, how they come back, like, big monsters, like, and we have heard also that, you know, when we commit offenses against the devotees, like,
yeah, because if you commit offenses to devotees, Krishna withdraws his mercy, and then it's easier to become influenced by the material energy. That's why it's so important to avoid committing offenses. Like that. You know, I've been practicing Krishna consciousness for a number of years now, but even in the last few months, I've had more realizations about the effect of offenses. Had to be very careful. Had to be very careful. It has more impact on our service than what we realize when we offend devotees. Try not to offend the devotees. Any points?
Yeah. Here, Prabhupada was very disappointed somebody blooped from the
movement. Yeah, Prabhupada said one time, he said, when someone leaves, it's 50% our fault and 50% their fault. That's how we should always look. Because sometimes I see when devotees leave, everyone says, oh, you know, they weren't sincere and they speak ill of them. But actually, Prabhupada said 50% is our fault. We should always think when someone leaves, what could we have done better? Could we have done more to assist them, help them, serve them? And what could we have done? Could we have done more? You know, obviously 50% is there because they left. But, you know, what could we have done also? We should always think like that. So, any other point? Lifeless, Mura's decapitated body fell into the water like a mountain whose peak has been severed by the power of Lord Indra's thunderbolt. The demon's seven sons, enraged by their father's death, prepared to retaliate. So that's something that everyone does in this world, we all do, is that we try to take control of material situations. Most of the time for devotees, it's Krishna's arrangement, whatever happens in our life. If something happens in your life, who is arranging it? Krishna is doing it. So what can you really change? But we spend sometimes all our energy trying to change things. So the father got killed, and what did they do? They thought, okay, let's avenge the situation. Whereas what they should have done, they should have understood this is Krishna's arrangement. Our father rebelled against Krishna, now he's dead. So let us not make the same mistake. We should surrender to Krishna. But they try to control this material world. And that's what everyone does in the material. We try to control it, right? For our own enjoyment. That's called demoniac spirit. Chapter 16 of Bhagavad Gita is called Divine and Demoniac Natures. Ishra Aham, Aham Bhogi, Siddho Aham, Balavan Sukhi. What is demoniac spirit? I am Ishwar, I am Bogi. I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. That's the spirit in the material world. So when we have that spirit, then we try to change everything for our own enjoyment. So this is the defect of the conditioned soul. So you see here, his sons, instead of surrendering to Krishna, they try to take control of the situation. They can't see that something is Krishna's, right? When something happens in our life, we have to understand maybe it is Krishna's arrangement. Krishna is doing this. Just like sometimes something difficult happens to you. Is that Krishna's arrangement? Why did Krishna make that happen to you? Bring you closer, make you more detached from the material world, to burn off your karma. Prabhupada says that whenever something negative happens to us, we should think, I deserve much worse. But Krishna is very merciful and he's just giving me a
token
reaction. Krishna is just giving us a little bit, we deserve much worse. So that is Krishna's arrangement, right? Everything that happens to us, we have to see, what is Krishna arranging in this? Sometimes we say, well, I don't like it very much, but then maybe you have to think more carefully. Krishna has an arrangement there. So, any points? Ordered by Bhomasura, Mura's seven sons, Tamra, Antariksha, Shravana, Vibhavasu, Vasu, Nabaswan, and Aruna, followed their general, Pita, onto the battlefield, bearing their weapons. So, each one of them was killed on the battlefield. But when you're killed by Krishna, what takes place? Yeah, you're benefited. Any contact with Krishna, even if you attack Krishna, because you're attacking Krishna, you get liberated, you get benefit. So even though they're demoniac and they attack Krishna with a negative emotion, they wanted to harm Krishna, but Krishna still purified them, gave them liberation. So any contact with Krishna is beneficial. And it is said they were sent to Yamaraj. Actually, this is in a couple of it. I'll read these two more verses because then it will describe that point. These fierce warriors furiously attacked invincible Lord Krishna with arrows, swords, clubs, spears, lances, and tridents. But the Supreme Lord, with unfailing prowess, cut this mountain of weapons into tiny pieces with his arrows. The Lord severed the heads, thighs, arms, legs, and armor of these opponents led by Pita, and sent them all to the abode of Yamaraj. Narakasura, the son of the earth, could not contain his fury when he saw the fate of his military leaders. Thus he went out of the citadel with elephants born from the ocean of milk, who were exuding mada from their foreheads out of excitement. So it said Krishna killed them and they attained the abode of Yamaraj. Yamaraj means the Lord of Death. But actually, anyone who's killed by Krishna doesn't go to Yamaraj. They don't go to Yamaloka. They go to Brahma Jyoti or Vaikuntha or some spiritual abode. For a devotee, there is no death. Prabhupada says this. It's one lecture, very nice lecture you hear. Prabhupada says, for a devotee, there is no death. Because when you die, if you're a devotee, if you're surrendered to Krishna, Krishna personally takes care of you. So there's no fear of death for a devotee. We're still fearful because we're not so advanced yet. But when you become advanced, there's no fear of death. Now, it says that I'll send you to the abode of Yama. But actually, Yama also refers to the eightfold yoga process, which begins with yama niyama. Like that. So yama means sense control. So the basic principle is, if we don't practice sense control, we won't attain liberation. Very important point. Rupa Goswami says this in the very beginning of the Nectar of Instruction. The Upadeshamrita. He says in the Upadeshamrita that you have to control the six urges, the first verse. Different vegans. Vegans means urges. You have to control your urges. So, if you control the urges, you'll attain liberation. If you do not, you will stay bound in this material world. So that is the beginning of spiritual life. You have to control those six. By controlling those six, then you'll be liberated. Any points? Yeah.
But in this case, anyway, liberation has a different connotation for us.
Yeah. Yeah, for us it does. Salokya, Sarupya, Shashi, Samipya. Different type of liberation. Lord Krishna and his wife mounted upon Garuda looked like a cloud with lightning sitting above the sun. Seeing the Lord, Boma released his Shatagni weapon at him, whereupon all of Boma's soldiers simultaneously attacked with their weapons. At that moment, Lord Gadagraja shot his sharp arrows at Bomasura's army. These arrows, displaying variegated feathers, soon reduced that army to a mass of bodies with severed arms, thighs, and necks. The Lord similarly killed the opposing horses and elephants. So it describes Krishna was shooting three arrows at every opponent. And the arrows, you know, when you shoot an arrow, the arrows have the feather at the end. So all of the feathers were multicolored. You know, some of the feathers are red, some are green, blue, yellow, like that. So even when Krishna kills people, he makes it very attractive.
Especially
like fireworks stylish.
Yeah, he shoots them, but you know when all the arrows are in there, and they're laying there dead. You know, there's colors everywhere. So you know when you looked on the battlefield, everything was very colorful and very beautiful. That's Krishna, huh?
Holy festival.
Yeah, like a holy festival. Because Krishna that's his mood. His mood is to enjoy. So even when he's fighting, he's still doing it. It actually says in the Bhagavad Gita, when you see him on the battlefield, he has a smile on his face. People don't smile when they go to battle, generally. You're in a very, you know, yeah, like you, very concentrated. Krishna was smiling. That's what he's like. Even when he kills them, it's all very colorful and festive. Lord Hari then struck down all the missiles and weapons the enemy soldiers threw at him. O hero of the Kurus, destroying each and every one with three sharp arrows. Meanwhile, Garuda, as he carried the Lord, struck the enemy's elephants with his wings. Beaten by Garuda's wings, beak and talons, the elephants fled back into the city, leaving Narakasura alone on the battlefield to oppose Krishna. Seeing his army driven back and tormented by Garuda, Bulma attacked him with his spear, which had once defeated Lord Indra's thunderbolt. But though struck by the mighty weapon, Garuda was not shaken. Indeed, he was like an elephant hit with a flower garland. So if you're a pure devotee, you don't have to fear any material situation. We're not pure devotees, therefore we are fearful of the material world. But for a pure devotee, there is no fear. Because they're fully surrendered to Krishna. So being fully surrendered, there is nothing to worry about. So Garuda, even though he was attacked, he had no fear. And actually nothing could harm him. Because of Krishna's protection. Even Lord Jesus... Jesus, it said he died on the cross. But Prabhupada said, no one can kill a pure devotee. So actually, he did not die on the cross. He had mystic power. So they took him down. They might have thought he was dead. They put him in the tomb, but he came up after 3 days. Prabhupada said, you cannot kill the pure devotee. Only if the pure devotee desires to die, he will die. Like Haridas Thakur, like Jesus, everyone. It could not be killed. Bulma, frustrated in all his attempts, took up the trident to kill Lord Krishna. But even before he could release it, the Lord cut off his head with his razor-sharp chakra as the demon sat atop his elephant. Fallen on the ground, Bulmasura's head shone brilliantly, decorated as it was with earrings and an attractive helmet. As cries of alas, alas, and well done arose, the sages and principal demigods worshipped Lord Mukunda by showering him with flower garlands. So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he said that even a devotee is happy when a snake is killed. Prabhupada was there in Mayapur and his guru Maharaj said there was a cobra. He said, kill him immediately. So they killed the snake. And then Prabhupada was confused. But then he read in the Bhagavatam later, in the 11th canto, it says, even a saintly person is satisfied when a serpent or a scorpion is killed. In other words, when someone is envious, right, and wants to hurt someone else, then even as devotees, we're happy when they're dead. Like the example of Mr. Nair, you know, he was fighting with Prabhupada with the land in Bombay, in Juhu. And when he died, Prabhupada said, I've been praying to Lord Nisringadev to kill him. So a devotee, if someone is demoniac, if they're opposing Krishna, they're envious, if they're trying to harm the devotees, if they're dead, then we're happy. We're not sentimental. So when he was dead, you know, everyone was actually happy. Makes the universe better. These kind of people. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki.